The fellow I'm about to speak to first became known for his abilities on the rugby field, including playing 15 tests for the national side, the Wallabies. If you're not a rugby union fan, though, but you do like to watch a bit of reality TV, you might know him as The Bachelor. He's also known as The Honey Badger, and now the author of The Honey Badger Guide to Life. Nick Cummins, welcome to Life Matters. Hello.
G'day, Life Matters. What's going on?
First of all, can you tell me, why are you called the Honey Badger?
Honey Badger's from the rugby days. I played a bit of footy and over there at the Western Force, and during some of those years, I had to try and find some inspiration, so I spent a bit of time on Nat Geo watching this little honey badger buzz around and cause some damage, and in a one-on-one battle, ended up killing a lion by ripping his balls off, and I'm not saying that's what I'm into, the ball tampering part, but the important part of
that. That's in cricket,
not rugby. Yeah, well, the message is to just, doesn't matter how big it is or how big the problem is, you just have a crack at it and you'll either win or you learn.
Well, I have to say, though, I didn't even know what a honey badger was. I had to look it up and I found out that it's a type of weasel that's found in parts of Asia and India and Africa, and it's known for taking on prey triple its size, so like lions, as you say. It has very few predators because of a thick skin and razor-sharp defences. Is that you?
Yes. Yeah, that's it. You probably tell from that last debacle that I've got a pretty thick skin.
We'll get on to that. Nick, where does your sort of Aussie larrikin style, that is a bit of a throwback, come from?
Around the dinner table. My old man, my grandfather was a shearer, and I think that stuff just got passed down, and I grew up with it, because there's a lot of Australians out there today who actually don't know what it is, and that brings sadness to me heart. But if I can throw a bit out there every now and then and try and keep it alive, then that's what makes that Australianism unique, our vernacular, our values, the way we see the world and how easygoing we are. That sort of is our reputation to the foreigners coming in.
Well, now, you've been a very successful and popular rugby player, but something you failed at in rugby, Nick, was the media training. Why? Yeah. Why? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so when you first come into the professional program, you have to go away and do an etiquette course where they'll teach you how to use what knives and forks for what meals and how to speak to media. It's sort of trying to make you into a gentleman, really. And even though I feel like I already was well on the way. Anyway, yeah, this one part of it was the media training, and I teach you how to address the question and be all fancy about it. But I tried to do their way, and she just goes, stop. By the end of it, she said, no, look, that's no good. That's a fail. And I was like, oh, struth. Like, I shouldn't have tried to follow their way. I should have just done it my own way. Anyway, I got back out and back into the rugby games, and all of a sudden I'm getting interviewed on the sideline, and they asked me this question, and I was at that point. It took me back to that point where I failed that little test, and I thought, you know what? I buggered up that other time, so this time I'll try something different. This time I'm just going to be myself. And I think once I just sort of answered it the way my old man taught me, which he goes, son, if you don't know how to answer the question, just tell them what you did in the holidays. And I found people actually just want to hear a story. They forget about the question. They don't even care. They just want to be entertained.
Well, also, what they don't really want to hear is the old sporting cliches and some sort of rote answer that, you know, someone has learned in their media training.
Yeah, that's right. When you see someone regurgitating someone, you just switch off. Oh, at the time, I'm just like, bugger it. I'm just bloody throwing out stories, and it was puff of black smoke here, and I bloody had two turning and two burning there, and then I crashed over for a media in the corner. People are trying to work out what the hell's going on, so they're kind of entertained.
Well, let's talk more about your family, Nick. You're one of eight children. Where do you sit in the order?
I just missed out on the medal. I came fourth.
How does where you come in the family lineup, especially in a big family like yours, contribute to who you become, do you think?
Well, I think massively, because I always had to battle, and so the older kids were trying to trick you into giving them, like your lollies or whatever it was, or getting the best seat in the car, or trading off different types of toys and things. And then you had the younger kids, you had to sort of care for them, look after them. I was changing nappies at 11, 12 years old. So you get a well-rounded, balanced approach, I think.
And two of your siblings have cystic fibrosis. How's that influenced or affected you?
it's been massive in our family. It's quite a challenge, and you know, it's been some tough times, and obviously over the years, like a lot of people, interviews, they ask about it, and my family, you know, sometimes get a bit over it and don't like to talk about it too much, but it has been, yeah, quite a challenge. And I think it does keep you quite grounded. It makes you appreciate life, but also not take life so seriously, you know, because there's far more serious things going on. And not just our family, but there's many, many families around who are really suffering. And to know that and to have lived a bit of that means that when you think you're all, you know, stressed out and the times get tough in work, or you just take a step back, have a breath and go, well, it's not all that bad. You know, I've got air in my lungs and I'm buddy. I've got a smile on my face. I've got Tucker on the table and I've got people around me that I love and love me.
Well, health, particularly men's health, is something that you write about and care about. Your father has had some very serious health struggles with prostate cancer. And this is where really you put him, your family, ahead of your rugby career in Australia to go and play in Japan, where you could earn more money so you could help out your father and your siblings. Is that right? Is that how it went?
Yeah, that's right. So my old man, he's diagnosed with terminal cancer at the prostate, and it sort of moved across to the hip and the spine. And yeah, it's a terrible thing, but it's still moving on. And Dad's doing his best. He's a stubborn old bugger. He'll keep fighting it. Like that news is never good to hear. And with my brother and sister as well, he's the full-time carer sort of thing for them. And I thought, yeah, well, I mean, I'd be mad not to go and put some money aside as a sort of nest egg and refer that rainy day that's coming, you know. If you've got something ready to go, then whatever needs to be done at that moment, you don't need to worry about, you know, finances. You just go bang, you just, yeah, fix it up if you can.
So your family's more important than your sport?
Than anything. Career, sport, I'd give away anything just to have health.
All right, Nick, so we have to come to this question. Why did you do The Bachelor?
Well, you know, when they first asked me, I said hell no, actually. And I bailed. I went bush for a bit. And then I came back, and apparently they'd gone out, they'd picked a bloke and they'd picked all the girls and they were ready to go. And then last second they come up to me and they said, no, look, we want to go with you. And I thought, oh, well, bloody hell, you know, it's 2018 and I've always been, you know, someone to throw myself in the deep end and try something new, and definitely this is something I would never do. And a lot of people were shocked, friends and family, that I'd even consider it. But yeah, I thought I'll have a crack, you know, I'm at that stage of my life, and the way I see it, it's a show. So it's possible to find someone, definitely, because you're throwing yourself in the mix with a whole bunch of, you know, women that you get to go and supposed to spend time with. But then, is it probable? Well, I don't know, because it is that TV show, and I'm not so huge on that sort of way of meeting someone. But there's definitely a chance.
I understand that you'd never actually watched it before you went on it.
Yeah, I'd never seen the show. My sisters mentioned it and said, "Oh, are you sure you know what you're doing?" And I said, "No, I don't. Like, I'm just I'm flying blind here."
Well, as we all know, there was a lot of shock and outrage that you didn't end up choosing anyone to ride off into the sunset with, which is what you're supposed to do in The Bachelor. I mean, given that you hadn't watched it before, did you actually know that was what was expected of you?
No, well, I didn't even know it was an expectation. I just thought you get on there and you with the hope of finding someone, and that's what I did. But if you don't, doesn't mean you're breaking the law, does it? Like, it seems like it was.
Well, at least the conventions of the show. Were you surprised then by the vehemence of the reaction to you choosing not to choose in the end?
I was actually disappointed a little bit that people are so brainwashed. I mean, you're not going to get your fairy tale ending every time. And what's more important, me just saying yes and going through the motions and dragging some girl through all this media about how we're in love, and then, you know, 3 months down the track after the contract's over, we're allowed to break up, and then
which is what kind of has happened with previous editions.
That's right. Yeah, that's happened. And I wasn't going to do that because, well, first of all, respect for the girl. I mean, I'm not going to drag them through all that rubbish, and then, you know, during that time when she might be more invested, or then to turn around and say, look, we built this on shaky ground. I don't want to do it, you know, and then cut it, break her heart. Bugger that. So I just thought, stand for something or you fall for anything. Yep, I'm going to cop a lot of rubbish for it. But people in the end will see why I made that decision. And to help me do that, I had to think to myself, well, those that matter don't really mind, and those who mind don't matter. And just press forward, make your decision.
Hey, Nick, did you find it difficult to date and get romantic with a number of women at the same time? I mean, this might be a question coming from the perspective of a woman rather than a man. But, you know, I mean, as someone who says he doesn't like to mess people around, did you find that difficult to be, you know, getting romantic with multiple women?
And that's the thing, dating them, that's a very normal thing. You date people in the outside world, and it's often people are dating multiple people at the same time. It doesn't mean they're like, there's anything more than that, just to going out for a bloody pizza or something. But it is a very strange setup where you've got all these girls and they're all like volunteering themselves to line up for dates like day after day. Now, as a bloke, you're two parts of you. One part's thinking, you bloody beauty, is a couple of good sorts, and you get to, you know, go out and kiss a couple and go on some fun dates and have a blast and get to know them. And the other one, you know, he's like, oh, geez, well, I don't know. Like, it seems a bit weird kissing girls, you know, every couple of nights. But at the same time, well, what else are you going to do? You're stuck there for 3.5 months. You're not going to sit there and bloody, if a good sort is right beside you, you've had a good day, I'm a male, a red-blooded Australian male, and she's a good-looking bird, I'm not going to deny nature. I'm going to go and bloody, have a crack. And that's the thing, that there's nothing else, but the most you'll ever see or anything that ever happens is just kissing anyway. And
well,
that's harmless.
I always wonder that.
Yeah, people don't really know that there is nothing that happens off the camera. Everything that you see is just all on camera. There's no downtime away from the scene. It's all, what you see is what you get.
Okay. In your rugby career, Nick, and in your life around other men generally, are you noticing any changes in, for example, how open men are with each other? I mean, I'm asking because in the football code I'm most familiar with, which is Aussie rules, lots of cuddles go on between players these days, and that seems to me to be something of a generational shift.
This exact shift that you're talking about is the shift that I had to have with my old man in order for me to kick this off, especially A Honey Badger Guide to Life. This is how important all this is. So back growing up, there wasn't too much male emotion shown. We wouldn't always hug. We rarely did. Like, I remember my first proper hug was when I was 18 with my old man, like one that was heart-to-heart.
Wow.
And heartfelt.
Yeah.
Other than that, I just felt like it was just, oh, yeah, come here, you're righto, mate, yeah, how you going, yeah, all right. Just a hug and sort of move on with your job or your duty. And I understood that my old man, he grew up the same way. He had an old man who was up at Sparrowfart, cheering all day, back at dark, bloody full of beer and bloody straight into bed. There was no sort of father-son time. That's not how it worked. So he didn't really understand exactly how that was. And now he's made little steps with me, and I'll make further steps with my sons when I have them. You know, that's the whole idea. We've got to better from the next generation each time. But you do. You look out and you see there are more hugs going on because, you know, this is interesting because the Polynesian culture that is so close to Australia, they're big on that. And I think that's rubbed off on us pretty well. I've seen in many rugby cultures, many rugby teams, it is that sort of Polynesian influence or that tribal influence. If it was Aboriginal, Polynesian, even African, they've all got that manhood group together where they look after each other and they connect, they hug each other. It's quite special, and I feel that's all rubbed off in the sporting world pretty well. But also, it is just a generational shift anyway between fathers and sons, which is then washed on through to mates to mates.
And Nick Cummins is the Honey Badger by nickname, a much-loved rugby player. For a time, he was the Bachelor, suddenly a much-loathed character by the end of it. And Nick, look, if you're after experiences, you can't say it wasn't, as you put it, one hell of a ride.
What, the whole thing or just that bloody show?
Well, maybe both. your life to be a hell of a ride too, don't you?
It was a hell of a ride, but, you know, I don't regret it. And I feel I've learnt a truckload from it. And it's funny how after this time's gone by now, because that show was done 7 months ago, by the way. I can't believe it's still in my life. But
will be for a while yet, I suspect.
Yeah, but, you know what, it's a good thing now.
There you go. One hell of a ride. Nick Cummins is also the author of The Honey Badger Guide to Life. And Nick, thank you so much for joining us in Life Matters.
Good on you guys. Champions.